Hey, everybody, it's Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com, and welcome to the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience Podcast. I am pleased to be on the phone today with actually a Chicago native drummer who's now toured all over the world, Mark Walker. He is a Grammy Award-winning drummer, composer, educator, and he is coming into town September 12th at Martyrs, which, of course, is at 3855 North Lincoln Avenue in Chicago. And this is the second time he's coming back to Martyrs in the same year, which is pretty exciting. He's going to have a smoking band. It's a WDCB event, and it starts at 8 p.m. And, Mark, glad you could take a few minutes. I know you're in Germany doing some gigs, so we'll talk a little bit about that, too. But I'm glad we finally connected here, and it's exciting that you're coming back to town with your own group.
Well, thanks, Mike. It's a real pleasure to be here and talk to you and plug everything that's happening soon.
Yeah. I mean, the fact you're coming back in, Martyrs is a great room, but let's talk a little bit because this is Mark Walker and Friends. You were in town in March doing Mark Walker and Friends, kind of a CD release, but we talked before we started. You didn't actually have physical copies, but now you have physical copies, so it's almost like a double CD release here happening in Chicago for your new recording, You Get What You Give. So let's talk about who's on the gig and what people can expect to hear that night, because I looked over the guys that are playing. I think everybody on this call and on this recording and show is going to know some of the names. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Sounds good. Well, the first person I called was Jim Trompeter, pianist, and because I had worked with him a lot back in the 90s, back in Chicago. We had a band together, and I was looking for a couple of horn players, and he recommended some absolute monster players, Victor Garcia on trumpet, and John Wojciechowski on tenor and soprano. These guys are just wonderful, super prepared, and great guys too. And on bass, we have Eric Hochbergs, who I've been playing with in many different situations for many, many years. So he sounds great. And my brother on percussion, Joe Rendon.
Oh, yeah.
Can't do a gig without him.
No, no. You know, it's funny because I put together a jazz fest here in Chicago and in August, and Joe was in the band Conjunto, and he came out and couldn't be nicer, but man, what a monster. So you guys have been playing together for a while every time you come through town, or?
Yeah. Sometimes we play in Chicago with Paquito de Rivera, and I suggest getting him on the gig, and Paquito usually calls Joe, and it's always been a great experience.
You know, let's talk a little bit since we're talking about this. Now, you're heavily influenced in, I mean, all the different styles, but a lot of the times, and we talked a little bit before we started the show, I mean, I've heard you perform and play in the Latin jazz, and I know you know all the different genres of Latin music, so I'm going to not talk about things I don't know, but I mean, I've heard you, you know, playing all these different situations. How difficult is it? Or how important is it for you as a drum set player specifically to lock in or find that percussionist that you can just lock in with? Because it seems to me like no matter what's happening in the band, it's so important to find somebody like-minded to be able to lock in with who's playing auxiliary percussion with you. Is that's probably something that you have to kind of know the guy and you guys are both on the same page in order for it to really groove, right?
Yes. Well, you know, you don't always have to know the person because I've stepped into situations where I didn't know the percussionist at all. But it's like a conversation. If you're sensitive to what's going on, then you can make it work. If you try to overplay or, try to express your dominance or whatever, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's always kind of a conversation. It's always a matter of give and take. And what's really important and what really helped me the most is listening to the different styles repeatedly over a long period of time to really get familiar with it in myself. Almost like getting nutrients out of certain foods. Mm-hmm. You know, it becomes part of you.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can walk in and always be listening as much as you can, and then make it work. So if I'm working with Joe, I know he's going to play mostly congas, and I don't play the same type of patterns that he plays. I play something that works with it. So it's complementing whatever's there, or thinking about what's there and thinking about how your part would fit into all that.
You know,
that's really important. Different Latin.
That's what I find amazing when you hear groups like this and listening to just, you know, sampling some of the tracks that you have on the new recording. Obviously, you can hear the Latin grooves. I mean, it's a really Latin-based recording, I think. It's totally grooving. And when I see these kinds of things happen, you know, rhythm section-wise, it's like effortless, but there's a lot going on. But you're right. Nobody's overplaying. Because if you overplay, it's not going to groove, right, with a couple of different people playing the same groove. So it's so important to know how to fit right in.
Right, exactly. And there are certain parts where maybe one person can step out a bit. Like if somebody's playing timbales, somebody's playing congas, somebody's playing bongo, the bongo player can play a lot more than just this simple martillo pattern. And it always works. That's just the nature of that instrument. It kind of fills up. Plays the most fills for everybody. That's just an example. But on the record, I worked with two great percussionists, Pernell Saturnino from Curaçao and Paulo Stagnaro from Peru, who's also working with Ricky Martin.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So they were totally easy to work with, and because we all knew the different styles and we all knew what instruments were required and how they function.
Mm-hmm. You know, looking over the recording, let's talk a little bit about the recording, because it's
sure.
You know, 10 tracks, which you probably could have put 20 tracks on a recording like this, but I mean 10 tracks, and are some of them, because some of them I don't recognize, are some of those composed by you? Have you rearranged things? I mean, how did that come about?
Yes, I wrote several of the tunes on there. I can't remember how many, but Candombe in Blue, Acumbia, Deep Six, Andalusian Sunrise, What About That? I think those were the tunes I wrote, unless I missed something.
Mm-hmm. How difficult is it? Like, you know, I love talking to somebody that writes and plays, because it's almost like you have to switch your brain, right? Because if you write the tune and now you sit down and now you're going to play it, You have to pull yourself out of the composition end of it and actually be a player now, right? Because, I mean, as a composer, you're so involved in the writing of the whole thing and putting it together. But now in order for you to play over it and really, really make it cook, you got to take yourself out of like, oh, man, is that chord right or is this right or is that right? Because you have to just play it almost as if you're a second, you know, somebody walking in and looking at the chart. Is that how you kind of look at this stuff?
That's exactly how I look at it. Yeah, sometimes the drum part's the last thing I think about. So I'm just concentrating on everyone else, and all of a sudden I'm thinking, oh, what am I supposed to play here? But I don't know how it works out.
You know, how did you get so ingrained in, like, the Latin music? I mean, you came from Chicago, and reading over your bio, I mean, you studied with Roy Knapp, right? So, I mean, he was a, you know, legendary percussion drum teacher in Chicago, but I wouldn't exactly think of him as like a Latin teacher, you know, a very good, solid percussionist. But how did you get in, like, so passionate about this style of music?
Well, I think the first time that anybody ever asked me about Latin music was Steven Hashimoto, mm-hmm. who I started playing with. I played my first jazz gig with him, and I started going over to his house and rehearsing with him. And he was the first one to ask me, how's your Latin? And I just kind of shrugged my shoulders at the time. I was about 17, 18 years old. I didn't know anything. But then a few years later, I got a call from the people in the group Made in Brazil to sub for the great drummer Phil Gratteau. Mm-hmm. And I started learning Brazilian repertoire and fell in love with the music. And there were... It was led by a Brazilian keyboard player named Breno Sauer, and Nelson Sauer was his wife who sang, and Paulinho Garcia was also on the gig. So it was great playing with them and falling in love with the music. And I started checking out some Cuban stuff on the way that people were giving me, like Ira Quere and Michel Camilo and different things. And actually, there was a great radio show, I think it was on WBEZ. It was called Mambo Express. So I heard Cachao and a lot of different music on there and got exposed to some really great music. I wish that show was still on because it was so great to listen to on the way home from gigs.
Oh, yeah.
Two gigs, et cetera. So, I didn't really get much Afro-Cuban experience until I actually started playing with Paquito. This is about 89. Mm. And when I started traveling with him, Danilo Perez, the piano player at the time, he helped me out a lot with basic Afro-Cuban rhythms. So if you can imagine the piano player teaching the drummer how to play rhythms, but this, you know, he knew all the stuff. And next thing you know, Giovanni Hidalgo is working with us. And Giovanni is like still one of the world's greatest percussionists, even though he's missing some fingers now. So it was kind of a crash course in Afro-Cuban rhythms. And I found out on tour with Paquito that there are all these different traditions going on, Venezuelan, Colombian, Peruvian, Uruguayan, Brazilian, that I didn't know about. And we would go play and perform in a lot of those countries. And I'd be exposed to sometimes people opening for us and playing their own rhythms. And it was, I couldn't help but fall in love with it because it's such a rich tradition, both rhythmically and otherwise. You know, so I started kind of immersing myself in that. And that's about the time the Caribbean Jazz Project happened.
Hmm. Okay. How did you first connect with Paquito? Because it seems to me like this style of music and everything you're talking about, you got your crash course, but I mean, you also have to be around, like, just ingrained in it in order to get it so ingrained in your system so you can play it the way you can play it. I mean, it's not like, oh yeah, I know how to play a bossa nova. I mean, this is like, you know, this is really, you have to be around people and just completely consumed in it, I would imagine, in order to get it, completely into your system. And then you also have to be around people, and you tell me if I'm wrong, that are also giving and want to share, you know, things like what you were describing. I mean, you can't learn this stuff in books. You have to be ingrained in the culture, I would imagine. And Paquito de Rivera's, I mean, you know, that being able to connect with him in 1989, that had to just be a huge door just flying open for you to connect with people.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Somebody once told me the paper don't swing.
Exactly.
You know, I always tell my students, I always tell them to go to the books last. Go to the music first. Mm. Learn about the music. Learn what the bass player is playing, the piano player, everybody besides the drummer, and then go learn the drum patterns and see what matches. But to answer your question about how I hooked up with Paquito, it was actually thanks to Howard Levy, because Paquito and Claudio Roditi came to town and played this place called George's in 1989. And they couldn't afford to bring in their whole band because the budget wasn't there, luckily for me. And so Howard organized the band. I think he actually had Joe Rendon on percussion. He had me, he had Farid Haq, who had worked with Paquito before, mm-hmm. on guitar. And it was a lot of fun. We had a great time. We played for a week. And I was hanging out with Paquito pretty much every night, you know, till 5 a.m. or so. And one night I dropped him off at his hotel, and he said, Mark, you're the only drummer who gives a shit. You got the gig. So I was thinking, okay, maybe he had a couple of drinks, you know, but thank you. And next thing I know, he called me for some gigs in New York, because he was always based in New York and the whole scene was really, you know, a lot of it was based there. Mm-hmm. That was a real eye opener going there for the first time and working with him. I met so many great musicians, and I found New York to be like another kind of school, you know, not only for straight ahead jazz, but everybody was there from everywhere playing their own music in a jazz context. So it was great.
Wow. Well, and that time of the whole scene at that time, that's like what, like early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, right? I mean, so that whole scene, there's a lot right. of heavy duty people coming up on that scene at that point.
Oh, yeah. And the thing that prompted me to move to New York was meeting Michelle Camilo backstage at, well, we played at the Blue Note with Paquito in, I think it was 89 or 90. And I met Michelle Camilo. I said, wow, I love your music. I'd love to play with you sometime. He said, sure, move to New York and we'll do some playing. And so the seed was planted.
Yeah, right. Well, it sounds like a good idea to me. So then
I moved to New York in 95. And I was thinking about Michelle. And I looked on the back of his CD and there was the phone number.
On the back,
I called the phone number.
On the back of his CD, there's just like a phone number for booking? CD, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Hey, kids, you won't see that on Spotify.
No.
So I called up the number, and it was Sandra, his manager and wife. And so I got in touch with them, and he sent me some charts to work on. And pretty soon, Horacio El Negro, who was doing who's in the drum chair at the time, he got the gig with Santana. So Michelle called me to basically sub for him for a couple of years. So that was pretty exciting.
Wow.
Because, you know, the drum chair for that gig is, it's really, it's like, you have to be going to the gym to play that gig correctly.
Well, and, and that was just a trio, right? That was like his trio at that right. point, right? Yeah. I mean, and he was touring the world, wasn't yeah. he?
He had different bass players like Anthony Jackson. You may have heard of him sure. at some point. James Genus, Lincoln Goines, Chris Mindoki, a few different cats. But it was a lot of fun. And then some time went by, and he still calls me on occasion. I almost worked with him in the summer, but the drummer he was using could make it. But occasionally we have a hit together, so it's a lot of fun. He's a great guy. And it's really fun working with him.
Well, that's I mean, I've seen him live a couple of times, but then, you know, you just go on YouTube and watch that. And it looks like, I mean, it's insane. What's
I mean, especially with the drummers he has, like Cliff Almond, Daphnis Prieto. Mm-hmm. I think he used Ernesto Simpson this summer. Just top level guys, you know, just insanely great drummers. So I'm honored to be, you know, called once in a while to do the gig.
Well, and you're still playing a lot with Paquito de Rivera too. And he happens to be on the new recording, which of course is called You Get What You Give. It's available at CD Baby, which I think is a great spot to go. Obviously Amazon, iTunes, all that stuff's going to have it, but they have the physical copies at cdbaby.com. And of course you can get more information on where Mark's playing outside of Chicago, markwalkerdrums.com. But you're coming in September 12th. And you're going to be playing tunes at Martyrs from that new recording, but Paquito's on that recording, and you've had you still have a great relationship with him. I know you were in town actually playing with him, I think at the Logan Center, maybe it was 2 years ago, and you're still touring and right. doing things with Paquito. So that's been a really long collaboration. And the two of you have played together, but he has done so many things. I mean, and you're doing so many different projects as well. And I'm always curious when I'm talking to somebody of your level, and I think it's important too, because there's a lot of, you know, musicians that listen to this that are coming up or younger, older, whatever. But especially with this type of music, how difficult is it, or how did you go about the process of, like, you know, you walk in, you sit down, we're talking about Michelle Camilo, we're talking about Paquito, all these guys, and you can't phone these gigs in. I mean, it's like go time from hit one. Was there like a moment, you know, whether it's when you moved to New York, when you were in Chicago or whatever it was, that all of a sudden you felt like you could just sit down and play at that high level, you know? Because, I mean, a lot of people, you know, you play gigs and you get comfortable and you start phoning it in a little bit. But these things you cannot phone in. It's got to be top level. How do you think about that stuff?
Well, I mean, the moment I think that I can just sit down and play that stuff at a high level is the moment that my career is over. I think it takes a lot of work and a lot of continuous work, and it will always take a lot of work to try to get to that level. And, you know, I mean, I can't sit there thinking I'm the shit. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, yeah. Right. Right.
So what I do is I try to prepare as much as I can, know the music if it's available, and you know what to expect, and you know try to come in to enhance what's going on rather than just show off.
Mm-hmm.
I tried, like Elvin Jones had a great line. He said, "I'd like to make it feel like I'm giving everyone a hug." Yeah, when you listen to his playing, that's the feeling you get. So I would love to get the same effect if I possibly can. You know.
Well, and
but also I also look at it like cooking in a way. Like you want to get this certain taste, certain smell for what you're making, and you want to get all the ingredients so that it creates that taste and that smell. So that's where all the knowledge of the rhythms comes in, and the tradition.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean,
there's analogies I could use, you know, language, et cetera, et cetera.
No, but I think that's a great way to say it, and I think that especially with this type of music, I mean, you're right. You're coming in, and you're trying to enhance the entire situation, and everybody in the ensemble is, because really, it's truly, even if you're playing in a quartet situation, this style of music is still really a true ensemble type of music, because you have to groove with the bass player, with the piano player yourself, and then if you add in horns, and then if you add in percussionists. I mean, maybe with a straight edge jazz thing or something, it might be a little bit different, or you can think about it a little bit differently. But this kind of thing, you have to groove, and you have to place your notes so that it grooves with what the bass player is doing, what the piano player is doing, really a little bit more specifically than even just swinging, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I really look at it all to be kind of like that. Like, I do a lot of jazz gigs around Boston,
mm-hmm.
and with many different people who have many different time feels. But, you know, it's like you got to just listen and groove. And when you do that, it just levitates.
Yeah.
The music just levitates, no matter what the style. I'm talking anything. I mean, it could be whatever. I mean, it could even be like pop music or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're really listening and everybody's supporting each other, that's what's really important, I think, because then you just get a feeling of levitation, and that's what it's all about. You want to lift the audience and lift each other at the same time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes a ton of sense, and I'd be remiss if we didn't touch on this a little bit, but you have two different websites. One of them is markwalkerdrums.com, but then also you have markwalkerlessons.com, and talk a little bit about that. I mean, that site, just kind of breezing through it and going through it, it looks like there's memberships you can join so that you can get on there. You get online lessons. I'm sure you can connect with you and things like that. Talk a little bit about that website.
Right. Well, I have a studio where I do video lessons,
mm-hmm.
and I also do a fair amount of session work. People send me tracks and I play on them, etc. But the video lesson site is markwalkerlessons.com, and it's got a lot of different styles that I've learned on there and some technical exercises. And it's a pretty good cross-section of a lot of things that I've learned from experience. But that site, actually pretty soon I'm going to be migrating that to a Patreon site. So that's not going to be around forever.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people can feel free to check it out. And there are a few free lessons on there and some paid lessons. But pretty soon I will be bringing that all to Patreon.
Well, which makes a ton of sense. And you'll be able to get a lot of good stuff on Patreon, too. I know a lot of drummers and musicians that use that. I love the fact that you can be anywhere in the world and still study with somebody like you. And practice and get everything out of it and ask questions and do all that stuff. I mean, you know, welcome to the 21st century, right? I mean, it's unbelievable now. I couldn't.
Oh, absolutely. I just actually, I've been teaching at Berkeley for 19 years, and I've been teaching at Berkeley online for about 10 years. And I recently just decided to get a degree through Berkeley online. And it took me about 3 years and I did it. And it was one of the best things I ever did for myself,
mm-hmm.
you know, learning all these new skills and production, composition, arranging, music business, et cetera, et cetera. So if anybody's looking to study online, I think Berklee Online is a great place to do it.
Yeah,
it's about 60% less tuition than the brick and mortar school.
That's what I was going to say. It's quite a bargain. It's quite a bargain. So we'll send everybody over to markwalkerdrums.com. And then when you get the Patreon site set up, I'm sure it'll be there. Markwalkerlessons.com will be up for a few minutes. But let's wrap this up because you are coming back to Chicago September 12th. Martyrs, 8 p.m. It's a WDCB 90.9 FM presents show. And that's martyrslive.com for tickets. It's 3855 North Lincoln Avenue in Chicago. Looking at the site, says the first set's going to be about 8 p.m. and tickets are in advance at $15, $20 at the door, but any price is going to be worth it. It's going to be completely grooving, I'm sure. And you know, it's one thing, and you tell me, Mark, and we'll wrap it up with this, but I think it's really important. We're talking about, you know, online lessons. We're talking about listening to a lot of music. We're talking about all of this stuff, but there's nothing that changes or any more effective that if you love music is seeing it live, because you cannot reproduce the vibration and the timbre and the interaction of the musicians, even on YouTube. I mean, what do you think about that kind of stuff when you're talking to some of your students? I'm sure you're telling them the same thing.
Oh, sure. I could not agree more with that. Because anyone who skips a concert to watch it on YouTube, they're just cheating themselves. You got to come see it live. You got to feel it. Got to feel the air moving. You have to experience it in the moment, right where it's happening. I mean, unless, of course, you're across the world, then you can only check it out. But there's something about live music that you just cannot duplicate. There's a vibration going on that just doesn't come across, no matter how good the video is.
Yeah, I totally agree. And especially this kind of a thing with the grooves that's going to be happening and the soloing and everything else, this is going to be really great. So September 12th, Martyrs, 8 p.m. Mark, I really appreciate you jumping on from Germany this morning and talking with me. And I look forward to hopefully meeting you in person finally and checking out the whole thing on September 12th.
For sure. Thank you so much.
Definitely. And everybody, make sure you head on over to martyrslive.com for advanced tickets. And of course, if you want to hear more of the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience, it's available on iTunes and anywhere that you get your podcasts. Of course, we have video interviews up on chicagojazz.com, Chicago Jazz Magazine, 2 to 3 times a week. So we thank you for listening and thank you for watching if you are watching a video of ours. And until next time, hopefully we will see you somewhere out on the scene.